Hi, welcome to Agile Self-Development, the podcast that gives you a roadmap for personal growth and self-improvement for your body, mind, and spirit. Hi, I'm Helene Coppell, and together we'll take this journey to becoming our best self, one version at a time.
My guest today says being alcohol-free is a choice and does not need to happen only when you hit rock bottom. She says that even normal drinkers may question their relationship with alcohol, wondering if it's really serving them. Dupe Witherick is an accredited alcohol-free well-being and transformational coach who believes that being alcohol-free is a superpower and makes you brave. And getting rid of this one thing is just the start of what could be the most amazing life. On this episode, Dupe will share more about her story and how she helps women reach their full potential and live their best life alcohol-free with her Thrive AF process. And now on with the interview. Dupe, welcome to the show.
Hi, Helene. It's so good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining me. And so very first thing, I always like to start with the basics. If we're going to talk about being alcohol free, you've got some background or a journey that led you there. Can you share a bit?
Yeah, sure. So my journey, I think like most people, university probably was when I, you know, started drinking. And it was in the UK, at least, we have something called Freshers Week. And so as soon as you sort of get to university at 18, it's this whole week of being introduced to university life, which involves quite a bit of drinking. And so that was the sort of start.
Not just the UK.
No, I get the sense it's in lots of places, but that was my journey. And then I ended up working in the city of London. And yes, so you do sort of team dinners, corporate networking events, conferences, client dinners, all of which tended to revolve around booze, around alcohol. And so it just got to a point where it was a habit, really. You know, I would I'd go out and I'd think, actually, like most people, you have alcohol when you're celebrating, when you're commiserating, when you're just having there's a sunny afternoon and you're out with your friends. And it was just normal drinking, really, as far as I was concerned. But as the years went on, I had a couple of episodes, I suppose, where I felt myself drinking a little bit more. There was sort of a grief moment in my life, which was, you know, trying to get through that. I found myself numbing out the pain. And then after becoming a mum as well, I think there's this whole thing that's advertised, big alcohol advertises to mothers, really, and says you need wine to sort of cope with your children. And that's absolutely ridiculous. But
all the slogans, right? Everything they sell to promote, like, aren't we cute? I had a baby. I need a glass of wine at the end of the day.
Exactly. And if you think about birthday cards and Christmas cards and all have glasses of, and I'd never really taken it in, but obviously now I'm very mindful of it. And so a couple of years ago, in 2020, I had the privilege, I was very lucky, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro just before we hit COVID. So I always say I climbed a mountain, came down, and the world changed. And
right.
So
look,
in March,
pretty
much it was me. I was obviously went up the mountain.
Climbed a mountain, now I can rest for 2 years in my house.
And so that was, but having gone through that experience, it was a big birthday year for me. And so that was why I was doing it. And I sort of did this amazing thing. And obviously being on the mountain, you don't drink anything. And so it was 6 days without drinking anything. And I was so clear headed and just taking in the vastness of being on this mountain and how small I was, but how many opportunities there were. And actually life doesn't end at 40, it can just begin. And so I sort of did that, came down, and then COVID happened. And obviously, as we all know, that was a pretty strange time for everybody. And from a work perspective, I found myself working a lot. I was just on Zoom calls all the time. I was, you know, I was doing meetings from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. There just seemed to be nothing other than work and trying to then juggle family life. And my daughter was obviously not at school. And so, and again, all the WhatsApp messages and the mummy memes saying, well, we need to drink. How are we going to get through it? You need to drink. And it was just this whole ramped up situation. And I've read since that a lot of people seem to increase the amount they were drinking over that period of time because it was just a way of coping with what was quite as just a...
And I don't have to leave the house tomorrow, so I could sleep in and...
Exactly. So then it got to, as the year went on, I just felt that I was feeling more stressed and anxious about work, about just getting through it. And I was thinking, I just didn't feel like I was setting myself up in the way that I thought I would prior to it happening, in the sense I was going to start a new decade. It was all going to be amazing, and sort of slumped a bit. So I then got to October time. And I kept getting this nudge and this feeling that actually, I knew I wasn't enjoying alcohol. So if I go back a couple of 2-3 years before that, I was a big red wine drinker, heavy red wines. I used to love Riojas and Malbecs and all of those sort of heavy red wines. I lived in Spain for a year and so got the red wine bug, I think. Then a couple of years before I actually stopped drinking, I just didn't like it. I couldn't drink it. So I thought, oh, well, I'll just go on to lighter red wines. So I thought I'd try Pinot Noir and that would be fine. But then I realised I wasn't really enjoying that. Then I went on to, I started drinking white wine instead. And obviously something was saying to me, you don't need this. You don't need it, you know. But I kept trying different things. Anyway, it ended up being sort of gin and tonic and champagne. That sounds ridiculous, but they were my sort of go-to drinks. And anyway, I got to the point where I felt, I'm going to have a break from it all. I'm just going to stop for what was going to be 21 days. So we were doing an event, sort of initiative at church, and you could give something up for 21 days. And, you know, so I decided to not drink.
A little cleanse.
Yeah, so I decided to not drink. And prior to that, I tried your sort of dry Januaries and your Lent, you know, stopping drinking for Lent or whatever. And I'd get to probably the first week and then I'd think, oh, well, you know, it's the weekend, so I just won't drink in the week. And then before you know it, well, I'll drink on a Friday night because it's a Friday night. And,
right.
And then
count.
You just sort of end up giving up because you feel like you're a failure and you failed. And so
that same idea as the resolution.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you never really feel good about it. And you just think, well, I might as well drink, it's easier. But this time is different. And I really felt a nudge, a really sort of a gut instinct that actually I need to just try and stop. And the truth will set me free kept coming back to me for some reason. And so I did. And for the first couple of weeks, I just drank lots of teas and coffees and waters. And
did you crave the wine? Or the gin and tonic?
I felt quite tired. I remember thinking feeling quite tired. I didn't crave it as such. I just I probably craved it a little bit, but not as much as I was expecting to. And I was sort of getting through it. But then something amazing happened, because I don't really know how, but I found a podcast online. I started listening to this podcast and realizing there was like a whole community of people who chose not to drink, who'd been drinking, you know, had been doing what I'd been doing, but had got to a point where they made a decision, a choice to say, actually, I'm going to not. And they were talking about how amazing their lives were and the pink clouds they were experiencing and all the things they were doing. And I was thinking, wow, that seems a bit weird to me, because I always thought, you know, if you don't drink, you're boring. So sober equals boring. But, you know, again, how wrong was I? And so I sort of discovered this. And then I realized that there was an alcohol-free fizz that apparently was the best one available, and people rated about it. And I'd been given a bottle in the summer, and I didn't, and it was in our cupboard. And I only remember that when they said the name. And at the time, when the person gave me the bottle, I was like, why are you giving me non-alcoholic fizz? Because I, you know.
Non-alcoholic fizz, is that like?
They're non-alcoholic champagne, non-alcoholic prosecco.
Okay, all different types they had. Okay.
Different types, yeah. And then I started discovering all these non-alcoholic drinks. And actually, the taste was good. So I was like, well, why am I going to drink something that tastes all right, but doesn't make me feel very good the next day, versus I can have something that tastes quite similar and
you're fine.
And I'll be fine, and I can enjoy life and not get stressed and anxious, because then I didn't appreciate that alcohol leads, you know, can lead to 200 different types of illnesses, 7 types of cancers. It has like negative effects on your heart. So it increases It sort of increases the sort of strain on your heart. It can lead to brain shrinkage.
Did you do all this research after you had that aha of this feels good? Why isn't everybody doing it?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So I, as I said, discovered this podcast, started reading a bit more, discovered Quitlit, which is literature about quitting, about stopping drinking, and there's lots of it. And the first one that I read was called The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. And actually that completely shifted my mindset, because it is a real joy. There is a, you know, lots of people think that they're giving something up, and for me, you're only gaining. And so as the years have gone on, I would say I had a pretty good life before, but I feel like I've opened myself up to so many opportunities that I would never have thought could have happened. I used to run at school. I used to enjoy sports and running, hadn't really done any of that. I've become a runner now. So I did 2 half marathons last year. I'm doing the London Marathon in April. That was me starting running less than 2 years ago. So I love that.
When I was in the comedy circuit, I know there were a few guys talking about and planning that they're going to take a year off from alcohol, and they did it. And I know one of them, I believe, kept it up because he became very physically fit and healthy, and he had kids, and he liked it so much. And it was about that. The other ones, they went back to drinking after their year. They're like, I finished a year, I can drink again. And to me, from that standpoint of only knowing, thinking about only alcoholics have to give up alcohol. So what are they doing going back to it? But you present that different viewpoint of, hey, it's in excess. I'm not an alcoholic, but I think I'll feel better. And you talk about, like on your website, what some of the real effects of alcohol has on your body, mind, your relationships, even if you are not an excessive drinker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you share more about that?
Yeah. So I think, as I said, you don't really appreciate, you know, I would say I exercised a lot before, you know, I didn't run, but I was big sort of HIIT training and strength training and things like that. So it's not about that. It's about being able to, for me, anxiety was a big thing. I thought I was getting, as I said earlier, I was getting quite anxious and a bit, you know, I could get stressed quite easily. And also then you start berating yourself a little bit and thinking, oh, I'm not good enough at this, or I'm not doing that well enough. And actually, just by not drinking, anxiety is something that's highly linked. Alcohol is a depressant. And so
I think people completely forget that point when they are drowning their sorrows, thinking that alcohol is going to help, and it's only exacerbating the problem.
Absolutely. It fundamentally exacerbates any sort of overwhelm, anxiety, stress, depression. And so, and doctors never really ask about it. So I know a lot of people who have been, you know, who are going through the menopause, and they're put on antidepressants, but actually doctors never say how much you're drinking. And actually the combination of alcohol and antidepressants is just a really bad combination. And so actually it makes people feel a lot worse. And people that have stopped drinking have actually come off their antidepressants as well. So there is definitely a link there. So from a physical perspective, you know, I think there's so many benefits to not drinking. From a relationship standpoint, really for me, it's more about being fully present, fully engaged. I think you are, but it's completely...
You think they're hilarious.
Exactly. You think all these things. It's really funny when you're in a bar, and I've got, you know, there's no judgment at all in any of this, in anything I do. But when you're not drinking and you listen to people's conversations at a party or at a bar, and you realize how many people repeat themselves as the night goes on, they're just saying the same stories over and over again. And yes, they do think they're quite funny, and it doesn't land as well. But, you know, that's
inhibitions are down. You also have a risk of, hey, I can say anything, get rid of my filters. you know, and even not drunk, but let's say you're tipsy, you're enjoying that wine and you say something you probably would not normally say to your partner.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you wake up the next morning or you wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning thinking, oh, my goodness, what did I say or how did I act? And you might not have said anything, but then you'd be quite paranoid. Exactly. So definitely from a sort of relationship standpoint, being more present, having sort of better conversations, remembering what people have said to you as well, you know, fully. And then from a just an emotional standpoint, I think we have to take a step back and ask ourselves, why are we drinking? And generally, it's because we are feeling something or we want to feel something. So we're either feeling sad or feeling angry or lonely or something. We think actually alcohol will help us sort of get out of that. Or we're wanting to feel confident or wanting to feel sophisticated. And all of this is sort of, it's rubbish.
From my perspective, it doesn't taste good. But, you know, some people like taste and they're wine connoisseurs and they're whiskey connoisseurs and scotch and blah, blah, blah. But to me, it doesn't taste good. So if I were to drink something, what would I be looking to get out of it? It certainly wouldn't be the flavor.
People think it does taste good, which is really funny, because a lot of people say to me, you know, well, you don't drink, but I couldn't not drink my red wine because it's so lovely and it tastes so good. And so
glamorous about holding that wine glass. I will tell you, Passover, you will see me with a wine glass. You will see me with a wine glass with grape juice in it because I want to hold the wine like everyone else and drink when it's time during the service.
And that is one of the key reasons people choose not to drink, not choose to keep drinking, because they want to fit in. They want to feel like they're drinking an adult drink. And so one of my favorite quotes, and it's someone called J.D. Lee Grace who says it, is keep the ritual, change the ingredients, and effectively have a nice glass with something in, make it look nice. And it doesn't necessarily, it could be a tonic water or a soda water and lime or something, but in a nice shaped glass. And you're tricking the brain, because ultimately what's happened over the years is your subconscious has become so used to various events and various things happening that then trigger your subconscious to say, I'm going to have a drink in this situation. Oh, it's a sunny day and we're sat outside in a beer garden, and so I need to have a glass of wine. Oh, it's my birthday, so I must have a glass of champagne to celebrate.
Mexico, oh, I need a margarita.
Holiday, exactly. All of those things. And so when you become alcohol-free, what you need to do is start building new triggers and new ways of thinking and new things that you actually are passionate about, that you enjoy, and then think, actually, this has been a really good experience and there was no alcohol involved. And so you're slowly building up these new memories, which then move you away from automatically reaching for a drink to thinking, I know that I can do this instead. I can go for a nice walk in nature. I can go for a run. I can do some yoga. I can have a glass of alcohol-free whatever to drink in a nice glass. I can, you know, I can do something different that helps me address whatever the emotion that is. And you're able to manage your emotions a lot better as well.
So how do you know if it's for you? I think you said there's 3 questions to ask if you're thinking of taking a break from drinking.
Yeah, so I would say the first question to ask, a lot of people will Google, am I drinking too much? Am I an alcoholic? How do I, you know, that's what people sort of Google. But for me, I think it's that if you decide you want to stop, or you think actually it's not serving me so much, I might want to just stop for, give it a month. So dry January has just happened. A lot of people stop during dry January, for example. Ask yourself why. Why is it that, why do you want to stop drinking alcohol? If you can write that down and keep that somewhere, I think that's really important. And so what is the feeling that you don't want to feel, or what are the things you would, what in life would be better if you stopped drinking? So ask yourself why. And then ask yourself, why don't you want to stop? So the question there is, I don't want to stop because I don't know what my friends are going to say, or I don't know what my family is going to say, or I don't know what I'll do instead, or, you know, if I go here, how am I going to cope with it? how do I answer someone who says, why are you not drinking? Do they think I've got a problem?
That's my life, by the way. I go through that. I will tell you, when there is a drinking event, like, oh, we're going to go to the bar and get a drink. Yeah. I'm very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not an alcoholic. I just don't drink. And I am always asked to explain, how can you not drink?
Yeah.
It tastes gross to me. You know, that's the answer. Then you can question it. But back to you. There was a third question.
Yeah. There are plenty of questions you can ask yourself, by the way. But the third question I would then ask is, would life be better without it? If you think that life could potentially be better, then why not try and stop for, you know, do what I did, 21 days, do 30 days. Give yourself a target.
Agile. This is the agile concept, right?
Start exactly.
Small, sit out, see how it feels, evolve.
But I'd add to that, that if you are going to do it, be open to it. So I think what a lot of people do is they say they'll stop for 30 days or 21 days, and then they literally white knuckle it and say, right, I'm not drinking. And as soon as you finish, it's like, oh, thank God I can drink now. And
right.
they probably end up drinking more than they were before.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Because they felt that they've missed out. And so for me, I really want to emphasize, it's not FOMO. It shouldn't be the fear of missing out. It's JOMO. It's the joy of missing out.
That was so cute when I saw JOMO, joy of missing out. I'd never heard that. So how do you, you're a coach. You coach in this area. How do you work with people?
So I mainly work with professional and entrepreneurial women who are feeling anxious, stressed, questioning their relationship with alcohol, wondering if they could be more wealthy, have a better career, have a better family life without it, potentially. And so I go through my method, which is the Thrive AF method, that effectively takes you from the beginning, where you're really thinking about and trying to understand your relationship with alcohol and understanding a bit more about alcohol as well. You know, ultimately, alcohol is ethanol. And so it's what we clean our houses with. It's what we, you know, it's petrol that goes in our car.
Natural science.
Exactly. And so just giving people that awareness and understanding at the beginning of and going through the whys as well of why they're drinking. And then it's really moving through from sort of stopping drinking. But as you're doing that, thinking about what are your passions, what are your hobbies, what is it that you really would like in life as you go through? Because I'll give you all the tools and tips to help you stop, and there are plenty of them that can help you stop. We also deal with, you know, looking at emotions, the wheel of emotions and things like that, as well as really challenging those limiting beliefs that I've talked about in terms of alcohol makes me sophisticated, alcohol gives me confidence. Does it really? Is that true? Right. Really questioning that.
Do I have to drink? How can I socialize where everybody's drinking but me?
Exactly. Going through that, you know, if your partner drinks and you don't drink, again, we go through all of that as well. And then we end up really thinking about, it moves more into the transformational coaching space. So that's really looking at where your life is at the moment versus where you want to go, thinking about, you know, for me, you want to be wealthy in all elements of your life, not just in your career or in your health. Or there's so many parts of life. Personal growth is an important part. Self-care is an important part. You know, spirituality, faith, whatever you want to call it, all of these things that holistically we want to be looking at all of those areas. And so we look at where you are today, where you want to be, and then we do things like vision boarding and various things. So there's a whole end-to-end program that I do on a one-to-one basis and a group basis as well. And I'm actually creating a new group program, which I'll be launching in the next few months. So really excited about that.
Is it only in the UK?
So it's online. That's the joy. Okay. So I work with people all over the world. So, so anyone can get in touch, and I'm happy to talk them through what's involved.
Okay. So we're going to have on the show notes, we'll put the links to your website. Do you want to, for people who are in their car?
Yeah.
How do they find you?
Thank you, Helen. Yes. So it's thrivealcoholfree.com. And I'm also on Instagram at thrivealcoholfree. And I do daily tips and inspirational posts and other things. So feel free to follow me on Instagram as well.
Excellent. Does that mean you're ready for your speed round?
I am. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Question number one, favorite U.S. city? Oh, gosh. I didn't know you were in the UK when I picked this question.
That's fine. Go for it.
Favorite U.S. city? I was going to say outside of where you live. You do not live in the U.S. Favorite U.S. city?
Oh, I've been to quite a few. I would say New York.
Nickname your parents called you as a child?
My parents didn't really give me a nickname, but everyone used to call me Dupes.
Dupes. I like that. What, this may be a morbid question, what celebrity death hit you the hardest?
Wow.
Oh, you're in the UK.
What celebrity death hit me the hardest? Oh, well, there have been so many recently. It's been quite depressing, hasn't it? I think Michael Jackson probably was one that was unexpected, and I had tickets to go to the concert.
Oh, no.
Didn't get to see him, so yeah.
Wow. I thought it was going to be a Princess Diana being over there.
So that was probably one of my first ones that I remember. That was pretty, I was quite young at that point. But yeah, it was quite, that was a shock. Yeah, that was a shock.
For me, it was John Ritter for some reason. I'm older than you, but if you remember, there was a show called Three's Company. And John Ritter, he was just such a fun, funny man, seemed nice. Anyway, puppy or kitten?
Puppy. We were talking about our puppies earlier, our dogs earlier.
What is your favorite carb? Bread, pasta, rice, or potatoes?
Pasta.
You hit all five questions.
Yay! It wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. Gosh. No pressure.
I did easy ones. You know what? For me, it would have been potatoes in any format.
Mashed and, gratin and all of them. Roast. Brilliant.
Well, I appreciate your time. At this point, I always ask, was there anything you didn't get to say that you want to add?
Just to say, you know, I really think that a lot of people who drink do question themselves sometimes. And so to the point I made earlier, I wouldn't be afraid to stop. I think people feel they need to have permission, be given permission to stop, especially if they're surrounded by people that are drinking. So don't feel that you have to ask permission. And also, if there's a bit of you thinking it could be better, but you're a bit frightened, remember that on the other side of fear is freedom. So go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. Visit agileselfdevelopment.com and subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they're released. And if you enjoyed the podcast, I'd love it if you'd leave a review in Apple Podcasts. It makes a big difference in how the podcasts are ranked. Thank you again for joining me, Helene Coppell, for this episode of Agile Self-Development. Become your best self, one version at a time. Catch you soon.